thank you all for joining us today. I'm sure by now everybody is well aware that just 2 weeks ago, President Trump announced that he is directing his EPA to formally begin the regulatory process to allow year-round sales of E15 in conventional gasoline markets. As you probably know, today retail stations in most parts of the country are unable to sell E15 during the peak summer driving season due to an antiquated and nonsensical 30-year-old EPA regulation. President Trump has himself called that the existing constraint on E15 unnecessary and ridiculous. And we certainly couldn't agree more, and that's why we're very excited and we're very pleased by the president's announcement on October 9th that we're going to get rid of that constraint. But clearly not everyone is excited as we are. The oil companies see a move to year-round E15 as a threat to their market share, and so they've really ramped up their attacks on E15. And now they're attacking EPA and the president for this announcement. The oil companies are pulling out the same myths and misinformation that we've disproven time and time again on E15. They say E15 damages automobile engines and that today's vehicles aren't warrantied or allowed to use E15. And I should point out that just this morning we released an analysis of model year 2019 owner's manuals and warranty statements, and what that shows is that more than 9 out of 10 new vehicles clearly, explicitly, unequivocally include E15 as an approved fuel for the use in those vehicles. The oil companies also claim that E15 would be worse for air quality than today's gasoline. They say boaters and small engine owners are going to ignore mandated pump labels and illegally put E15 into their equipment. And now they're arguing that EPA doesn't even have the legal authority to make this regulatory fix. So really the purpose of our call today is to set the record straight on those issues and others, and answer your questions about E15 and the things that you're hearing. And really, unlike the oil companies, we're turning to real experts, not paid actors in attack ads, to help sort out the facts from the fiction on E15. And so with us today, we have Gary Herwick, who's a retired General Motors executive. We have Janet Janowitz, an engineer and air quality expert. We have Matt Morrison, an attorney who has years of experience with Clean Air Act issues. And finally, we have Gary Burris, a marine engine mechanic and avid boater, and Brian Sowers, who is also an avid boater and fisherman, and the voice of the Crappie Masters fishing tournament and host of the Crappie Masters television show. So I'm going to ask each of our speakers to say a few words about themselves, and then address some of the myths and misinformation that is really clogging the airwaves today, courtesy of API and others. And following remarks from each speaker, we'll open it up to your questions, so be thinking of some questions. We're going to start with Gary Herwick. He'll be followed by Janet Janowitz. Then we'll turn to Matt Morrison and finish with Gary and Brian Sowers. So Gary Herwick, the floor is yours.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. And for everyone on the call, I have expertise and knowledge in the areas of vehicle emissions, transportation fuel quality, and alternative fuels. I had 35 years with General Motors in the development of catalyst-based electronic emission control systems, and also in the area of regulatory policy development in the area of vehicle emissions and transportation fuel quality, and also alternative fuels. I retired as Director of Environment and Energy at GM, at the GM Public Policy Center in Detroit. During my career, I led industry efforts to promote low-sulfur gasoline and diesel fuel, working with the oil industry, with a coalition of auto manufacturers, with groups of environmentalists, the regulatory agencies, Environmental Protection Agency, California Air Resources Board, and so forth. I also played a key role in a life cycle greenhouse gas analysis of various fuels and engine types, where we evaluated ethanol and other low carbon fuels and their effects on greenhouse gas emissions. During that time, I was in the area of vehicle emissions development. I was program manager for LT1 V8 engine at Chevrolet Engineering, 1992 Corvette and Camaro. I was also emissions committee chair at the Coordinating Research Council, which is a group of auto and oil industry research people conducting emissions and fuels research over the years. After I retired in 2005, I had a consulting business in the areas of vehicle emissions and, you know, and transportation fuel quality and alternative fuels, where I worked for a variety of clients, the ethanol industry, but also biofuel startup companies, the Department of Energy, the oil industry, and several others. I am a mechanical engineer by training. We've been hearing a lot of misinformation. And, you know, as Jeff explained to start with, I can understand the oil industry is going to oppose that. You know, I have many, many friends and colleagues in the oil industry. They are, you know, they are losing significant market share because of the fuel economy regulations to start with, but they don't want to cede any more market share. So they are fighting this. But there's a lot of misinformation out there. I participated with the oil industry in 2010 and 2011 in what was called the mid-level ethanol blends research study, where we looked at the durability effects of E15 and higher ethanol blends. Out of that study, it was clear that there were no effects on vehicles of the model years that we studied. And that study was used, it was evaluated by EPA and others in their partial waiver decision in allowing the use of E15 in 2001 and later model year vehicles. So since we found no adverse engine effects, we looked at catalyst function, or rather EPA looked at catalyst function and the durability of catalyst emission control systems and found no problems. Based on that and based on also a Department of Energy study of catalyst performance, EPA issued that partial waiver for E15 for 2001 and later model year vehicles, and I believe that was in 2011. Right now, 2001 and later model year vehicles is probably 90% of the fleet, 90% of the in-use fleet. So there really isn't a basis for saying that it damages engines. And in fact, I own a 1963 classic Chevrolet, and I burn an E10 premium blend fuel in that without any problem. So there certainly isn't a risk in terms of engine damage. In addition to that, it has been said that there have been air quality effects. That there really isn't a basis for that either. E15, the part of the, you know, I believe part of the reason for saying that has to do with volatility differences in a 10% and a 15% blend. But if you look at volatility curves from technical papers, the volatility of a 15% ethanol blend is essentially the same as 10% ethanol blend. So there really isn't any effect of any additional vaporization of the fuel in it with a 15% blend compared with a 10% blend. So there really isn't a basis for any of this. I guess maybe a better thing to do would be to answer questions as they arise.
Sure. Thank you very much, Gary, and let's move on to Janet. Janet, go ahead.
Hi, this is Janet Yanowitz, and I have a PhD in environmental engineering. I've been consulting for some 20 years and almost entirely on emissions from motor vehicles, and I worked especially on renewable fuels, both ethanol and biodiesel. And I am really a scientist. I published 24 peer-reviewed papers on renewable fuels, and I work closely with the National Renewable Energy Laboratory in Golden. I think that I've been asked to specifically address air pollution concerns. I know I read that stories that say that people are concerned about increases in smog and ozone. And really, there is no evidence that E15 will increase the emissions, the tailpipe emissions of either NOx or organics. Those are the two pollutants that cause ozone. And, for example, I know that Gary just mentioned this study. The largest study that was done on emissions for E15 was done by the Department of Energy, and it was done on behalf of the EPA. And they looked at E15 and E20 and E0, compared them, and found that for these vehicles that they tested, there was no increase in emissions. And especially no increase in emissions in NOx and organics. Those are the pollutants that we are concerned about with causing ozone. And there was a reduction, actually, in carbon monoxide in that test. And, of course, that's the reason why we have oxygenated fuels in the first place. They were first used in Denver, where I live, to reduce carbon monoxide. I've also put together a study. I've just been doing that recently, comparing E15 emissions from all studies that were done, and I'm finding no statistically significant impact on emissions. So I don't know where the discussion in the media comes from, because basically the emissions tests that have been published by scientists and engineers do not show any increase in emissions with E15 in comparison to E10. And I'm happy to answer questions, but I guess, Jeff, you want to hear from everybody first.
Yeah, let's do that. Thank you very much, Janet. Matt.
Yes, Jeff, thanks very much. My name, again, is Matt Morrison. I have been practicing environmental law for almost 30 years. About 22 years of those, that period of time has been with EPA and the Justice Department. The last 5 years, I've been with practicing with Pillsbury, Winthrop Shaw Pittman. When I was last at EPA, I was Associate Director for Clean Air Act Enforcement, where I focused on fuels and vehicle and engine issues. I just want to touch base briefly in introductory remarks to counter some of the misinformation that's been disseminated about whether EPA has the legal authority to extend the 1 PSI waiver to E15. My view, after analyzing this pretty carefully, is that it does have that authority. Not only does it have the authority, but extending the waiver to E15 would be consistent with the language in the statute. It'd be consistent with the legislative history of the statute and the provisions, and also be consistent with Congress's goals of promoting renewable fuel use and energy independence. I also think that to the extent that there have been prior regulatory interpretations that haven't yet embraced the extension of the additional 1 PSI waiver or allowance to blends like E15, that those prior interpretations have really been overtaken by new developments in fuels. I don't believe it makes sense environmentally when E15 is the same as and in some ways superior to E10. Lower volatility, higher octane, greater fuel efficiency, as well as just mentioned, lower tailpipe emissions. But going to look at the Clean Air Act for just a moment, the starting point of this, again, you have to realize that the Clean Air Act does put restrictions on the volatility of fuel, or as measured by RVP, or reed vapor pressure, to combat the formation of summer ozone. 9 PSI is a number that's built into the statute. It's in the statute itself. And although adding some ethanol to the fuel will increase slightly the amount of reed vapor pressure compared to ethanol-free fuel, Congress recognized the benefits that ethanol provides, and so it put in special provisions into the Clean Air Act to specifically allow continued blending of ethanol into gasoline and diesel even during the summer months, so it could still add ethanol and maintain compliance with the statute. I think it's important to recognize that there's currently no debate that the waiver extends to E10. The discussion is simply on whether it extends slightly further to higher blends, particularly E15. And in my analysis, the answer is pretty clear. It should, and it does. There are two primary statutory provisions that you have to look at. One is 211F, the other is 211H. One deals generically with fuels and fuel additives, that's 211F. The other one, 211H, deals with the specific topic of reed vapor pressure. And although in the past EPA has interpreted 211H to apply to blends up to 10%, well, that was in a different world. That was when E10 was the maximum amount of ethanol allowed in fuel, and that's simply no longer the case today. EPA has expressly recognized E15 blends as well today, but before it can extend that allowance, it has to first make certain determinations. And in my opinion, EPA can make those findings. And so, in sum, I think extending the 1 PSI allowance would be consistent with the language of the statute, consistent with legislative history and congressional intent, and I think appropriate for the benefits that E15 would provide. And like everyone else, I'm happy to take additional specific questions when we have time.
All right. Great. Thank you, Matt. And we're going to finish up with Gary Burris and Brian Sowers. So, Gary?
Well, I own a business. It's called Sport World Boat Center. We're here in Missouri. We mainly deal with outboard motors. We repair them. We sell them. Whatever it takes with them. Been doing it for 21 years now. We do all the way from old stuff from clearing the 60s still that are still around, and all the way up to the brand new fuel injected high tech engines that are out. As far as E15 goes, the manufacturers still haven't recommended in the outboard world to run that. The 10%, they recommend 87 octane. We've seen no problems with it. We get you hear a lot of the stuff where they say, well, it's eating up our fuel lines, it's messing up our carburetors. We're working on engines that are 20, 30, sometimes 40 years old. They come with fuel lines falling apart. Well, we can't really see any evidence that, anything other than old age may have fixed them that way. I say we're working a few of the IOs, the car type engines on them. Everybody I know is pretty much just running 87 octane. There's a few of them that are running the 91 without the ethanol and stuff in it, and we don't see any advantage to it. It doesn't run any better. We don't see it doing anything different than standard fuel. I like the other Gary that you was talking earlier. I have a handful of old muscle cars, all the way from the 60s up, and I burn 87 standard right out of the pump gas in every one of them, and have for a long time. And we just don't see the problems pertaining to what people claim is happening with them. We see age taking more toll than anything. All these new engines they're all recommended to run on just standard right out of 87, 10% fuel. So everybody is geared up to it as far as all the new equipment. And, that's all I can see, with the 15, until they change something with that. Everything is good to go with the 10% even.
All right. Great. Thank you, Gary.
You're welcome.
Brian, you have anything to add?
Yeah, just a couple of things. Just taking what Gary said, and by the way, my name is Brian Sowers, the voice of Crappie Masters and also co-host Crappie Masters Television. Grew up in an agriculture community in Waverly, Missouri, in central part of Missouri, right along the Missouri River, so been involved in agriculture all my life. Got into the radio business and also then spent over a decade, 11 years as a matter of fact, as an ag broadcaster. during that time, had a chance to become more acclimated with not only ethanol, also biodiesel as well. We work with the Missouri Corn Growers Association and the Missouri Soybean Association. In fact, I have two ethanol plants within 10 miles of my house on both sides going each way. So became very acclimated in that. Got into the fishing industry and was fortunate enough to bring that in there, to bring into the outdoors, to bring agriculture involved in that, especially in the marine industry. We thought it was very important to get that out there because the message that was being given across from everywhere was you cannot use E10 fuel in your boats. The worst thing that happens, the worst thing that you can do for it. We've been on a 4-year educational mission, and we'll continue that through that, to where we have gotten programs in place right now to where if our tournament trail participants are using E10 fuel in their outboard, we have a cash incentive for them to do so. So we have been doing this for 4 years now, and we run basically 18 to 20 tournaments all across the country, from Florida through the southeast part of the country up to the Midwest. And for 4 years, every tournament winner has been using E10 fuel in their boat. We've not had anybody that we talked to. We also do another incentive. If they're using E10, they get $100 for that. Same thing. We've had none of our angler participants, and we're talking thousands of people out there that have never reported any issues with their motors whatsoever. So 4 years, all those winners have been using E10 fuel. A lot of questions I get are, okay, well, how do you know that? Every tournament winner has to go through a polygraph process. So we know that for a fact. A polygraph, a gentleman who does our polygraphs, has a history with the CIA, the FBI, so we trust his judgment when he does the polygraph. But 4 years straight, we've had that issue. Also, as it pertains to E15, we ask this question as well, because granted, it's not in everywhere, but a lot of the areas in the Midwest, you will find that occasionally. We've had no one, not anyone, over the thousands of people, and we've asked that question on Facebook. We have 135,000 Facebook followers, 3.5 million people watch us on television. We've never had anybody, and when we put the question out there in the survey or anything like that, have they misfueled? We've never had, other than maybe less than 1% of people go, well, you know, my mechanic told me this or told me that. Well, then with the educational process, what we've been able to accomplish is getting that information out there to them that this is not an issue in your outboard motor. I have a 1992 Nitro with a 1992 Evinrude that Gary Burris knows about. Never had any issues with that. And taking that a step further, have a 66 Mustang. Same thing. Use 87. That's all I've ever used in my boat. It's all I've ever used in the car. It's all I've ever used. And I've never had any motor issues or any fuel issues whatsoever with any of this. So we think that there's no doubt about this. And granted, as Gary Burris mentioned, E15, and we're putting that out there too in an educational platform, that you can't use that in your boat. Put it in your vehicle. Put the E10 fuel in your boat. And we think it's just it's a win-win for everybody. It supports, again, not only the economy, it also supports the air quality, the water quality, something that we're very, very interested in is the conservation aspect of this, to making sure these waterways, because we call it the Crappie Masters family, that these next generations have the ability to go out there and take their kids fishing, swimming, whatever the case may be. And by using this, we feel what we're out there, you know, talking to these people in the recreational aspect is E10 is fine. All major marine manufacturers of engines all say E10 fuel is okay to use. So that's what we're out there doing. So again, just like all the other speakers, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Jeff, this is Gary Hurley.
All right.
And might I add a comment too that I just thought of? It might be a helpful thing to hear from from an auto manufacturer's perspective. You know, as you recall, I'm General Motors retired, and if you look at E15, making the design modifications for the use of a 10% ethanol blend, you know, they're relatively simple. It's a material, you know, they're changes in materials. It's a pretty simple and you know, on low cost change in design, and there are a couple of software changes that need to be made in the control system. But changing from 10% to 15%, really you wouldn't expect, you wouldn't anticipate any changes in durability, any changes in engine operation between 10% and 15% or anything significant. So it just, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to say that if 99% of the gasoline in the United States is blended with 10% ethanol as it is now, to go to 15%, that you would expect it to damage engines or change the durability or change the engine operation. It just, from an engineering perspective, it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, and in fact, the data has borne that out.
Right. Great. Good point, Gary. Thank you.